Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. For this week's podcast, we're in Southwark at the HQ of the Wireless Group to meet their new content director for music radio, Francis Curry. We've got David Lloyd's radio moments as well, also the latest news with Stu Clarkson. But first, what is one of the UK's best known and most successful radio consultants doing taking on a staff job? And what's he got planned for the most high-profile of his new stations, Virgin Radio?
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
So, Francis Curry, it's your first day. Shouldn't you be getting on with some work?
Actually, I've been meeting people all morning, so it's quite nice to have a moment to talk to one person.
Excellent. How's it going so far?
Yeah, so far very good. I'm still here.
Have you made some massive changes, or are you at the stage of kind of drinking it all in?
No, I'm still at the stage of getting my pass, getting my email account and saying hello to everybody.
OK, I wanted to talk to you about the whole business of looking after a radio station. You've done a lot of consultancy all over the world. When somebody calls you up or calls you in and says, consult about my radio station, Francis, what's instinctively your first step?
I've said this to many clients, that it's almost always my opening pitch, is that every radio station, every market, every situation is different. So when somebody invites me in, I sort of go in with a know-nothing state. I'm conscious always that I'm the person who knows the least in the room. And it's a bit of a cliche, but I hope that I, as a consultant, have had the questions that need answering. So, you know, you can have different culture, different language, different history, different market, different regulatory environment. All of those can have quite a profound effect on the content. So it's absolutely dangerous to make any assumptions, especially when working abroad, about what works and what doesn't.
What tends to be the thing that they are worried about when the call goes out, you know, call Curry? Is it that the advertising isn't working for them, or the station doesn't sound good? They want to change it into a different format?
My consulting's really always been much more on the content side than sales or promotions. And I think it's true to say nobody's ever called me when the station was doing really well. So normally what happens is, there's a cycle where if the programming goes off course over time, the rating goes down, the revenue goes down, they then tend to strip out some of the things that used to be part of the support structure, so the research goes. And normally when a station calls a consultant, they've gone through this cycle and have decided they've run out of ideas and need some fresh input, some fresh thinking to help them get them back out of the hole they've dug themselves into.
Do you start with, this is what I feel, you know, I hear you and I hear the station? Or do you start by saying, look, let's do some research, let's get some actual facts and figures to deal with?
As a owner of a research company as well as a consultant, I think in an opinion-based argument, everybody's right. That's the challenge. And so often the most senior person or the most vocal person will have terrific influence on a business. And what research does is it actually answers the questions you need answering in an independent way. So you're not asking anybody with a vested interest. You're asking listeners who don't even know who's asking the questions. And I think sometimes people are very intimidated by research, by the spreadsheets and the numbers. But actually, it's just asking the opinions of the people who matter most. And so research, I think, is tremendously helpful. It doesn't tell you where to go. It tells you where your listeners are and what they think. And it gives you a very solid base to start being creative and start come up with some new ideas.
Let me give you a little problem to solve, or at least give us a clue about how you might go about solving it. Let's say that my radio station's got a problem with 35 to 44 year old women, and the figures around it are okay, the age group a bit younger is fine, the age group a bit older is fine, there's lots of men listening, but I need a few more women in that important audience. Where do you start looking for a way of making that happen, of healing that issue?
Funnily enough, often people don't have anything like that level of understanding of their audience. Take that as an example. Then typically what I would do, if the priority was to grow, for example, 30, 39 women, then the first thing I would typically do is find some of those women and talk to them and ask them what, you know, about their lifestyle, about their attitudes, about their behaviour. I remember a slightly different example working in a station in Scandinavia where there were, I think, 8 middle-aged men who were redesigning a sort of CHR radio station. And I had to say, hang on a minute, this just doesn't make any sense, because it's sort of dads deciding what their daughters want. So we went out and found a couple of people, somebody on reception and a friend of hers who came in. And we just spent an hour interviewing them. So not kind of heavy duty, robust research, much more anecdotally based. But what time they go out and how much they preload before they go out and what they do after the club at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I think it was actually quite a shock to most of the guys in the room. So I think for me, one of the things that's really important is really, really understanding your target listener. And you can do it through numbers, but you can also do it through just talking to them and asking questions. And sometimes even that level of unsophistication doesn't happen.
You and I both lived through the era of the Australian consultants who came over to Britain and said, just stop talking. Just get as many ads away as you can and just focus the music down to a really tight playlist. And that lasted for so long. And now we've got Spotify and everybody's got the entire world's record collection in their pocket. People are saying, no, we have to bring back personality. Is that how you see the trend at the moment?
The joy of radio, I think, is that it is this quite complicated mix. It's not pure music, it's not pure personality, it's not pure information. And I think the evidence seems to be that things like Spotify are replacing things like CD listening, perhaps more than radio. I think it's dangerous to think that more talk is better talk. One of the challenges for all broadcasters, I think, is that people's attention spans are getting shorter. So this might sound a bit pretentious, but in some ways, a good broadcaster becomes a bit more like a poet. They get very good at saying a lot with a few words. And I think the time for long, rambling, sort of stream of consciousness links, certainly in music radio, have gone.
Although, counterintuitively perhaps, podcasts seem to attract that long listen, as people say. So perhaps there is a requirement for that, and maybe it's just not on broadcast radio.
Yeah, and I think particularly music radio, where people want a mix of personality and entertainment and information and music. And the sort of those are the basic ingredients of every music show. And what proportion you need and exactly what flavour of each you need depends on who your target audience is. But I think it's unusual, and Radio 2 may be the unusual one, where although it is a music station, it's really driven more by personality, and the music fills in the gaps between the people. So it is a music station, but it's not really driven by the music in the same way that many other radio stations are.
Where do you stand on the traditional radio furniture? You know, for years we've said, well, we've got to do the news, we've got to do the travel, we've got to do the weather, we've got to do all those things. Now my sense is people are finding out that information from their mobile phone long before we can process it and broadcast it. So particularly on a music station, do we need all that stuff anymore?
Again, it depends a bit. We've done quite a lot of research on this in the past. It depends quite a lot on who you're asking. So the younger audience have a much lower appetite for current affairs. No big surprise. That hasn't changed very much over the years. They don't really care about travel news because most of them don't drive cars. So it does vary a little bit by age. But I think it's important to challenge all those preconceptions. I was at a conference yesterday, day before, funny enough, in China. And somebody was saying that radio's biggest threat is its own history. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, that we need to sort of re-question and re-challenge a lot of our preconceptions about what are the essential ingredients in making good radio.
I think that's a really interesting idea, because that's basically something none of us with any experience ever do, because we say, oh, I've been through that issue, I know how to deal with that kind of thing. And maybe it is time to say, well, news on the hour, what's the point of that? You know, running this many ads, or perhaps should we have fewer or more, or should they be different? Or, you know, it's those things, maybe we just don't challenge our heritage enough.
No, I think they do need to be challenged. If you look at podcasts, for example, people give a much greater level of commitment to a podcast. By the time they subscribe to it and they've downloaded it and they've listened to it, it takes significantly more effort on their part to engage with a podcast. So they're already much more invested in it by the time they start listening to it. With broadcast radio, still typically it's very easy to turn the radio on, hit the button and start. So I think they're quite often a bit less invested. So we need to make sure that our content, our output, is as focused and targeted to people today as it can be. And the idea that, you know, streaming's only 15-24 and that Spotify is only for young people just isn't true anymore.
So you've had this fantastic job. You've been flitting all over the globe. As you said, you've only just come back from China. Why on earth have you given all that up to come and have a proper job?
Well, I have to say, the last 10 years has been amazing. I think I've clocked up somewhere approaching 1,000 flights. I've worked with something
You'll
over...
You'll never pay for a flight again, Francis, will you?
Most of the short hops around Europe. I've worked with upwards of 100 radio stations, and I've had the most fantastic time. I mean, from a lifestyle point of view, it's quite challenging. Sometimes two or three countries and two or three beds in a week. But one of the things I've really always missed since I stopped running programming a radio station has been part of a team. And even though I'm a virtual member of every group of people I've worked with, in the end, you rock up with a laptop and that's it. And you have to sort of perform every day. Now, I like the challenge of the performance, but I miss the being part of a team where if things are going well or you need a second opinion, you can find them, but people aren't in the same headspace as you. I've also missed leading a team. And part of that is about owning a project. The challenge with being a consultant, in many ways, it's lovely because you don't end up in the end being accountable. But the challenge
is... Well, I was going
to
say, nothing's ever your fault, really, is it,
also,
if you're the consultant?
That's true, and it's also not yours. And that's the difficult bit. You know, you can work with some people and you can feel as though you're really making progress and you're helping them solve their problems or unlock their potential and optimize their audience. And you go off and you have emails and phone calls in between and occasionally you monitor from the office. Then you go back and discover things are quite different or it hasn't worked. Because they haven't done quite what you said or because something needed adjusting and that didn't come up in the conversation. So the things I've really missed and I'm so looking forward to with a new job are one, being part of a team, two, leading a team, and three, actually being on the hook, owning a project and really being able to live with it and work with it every day. It's them every day and really sort of be 100% engaged in one thing rather than 20 or 30% engaged in 10.
Instinctively, just split your job in half, which is not fair, really, but you've got the local stations. Are you going to do more shared programming? Is that the idea? Is it going to be more of the sort of heart-smooth kind of idea?
It's actually the three chunks. So the responsibility is Virgin, National, the ILRs in the UK, and the radio stations in Ireland as well. And it's day one. So I'm certainly not going to reveal my hand or play my cards just yet. But I think, again, it's important to look at all options. You know, a lot of these radio stations are already very successful. I think there can be a temptation as the new guy. And I've seen this happen as a consultant when the new programme director comes in. You know, anything's good as long as it's different. And I don't buy that. So the first job is really to spend time with the people, spend time with the products, think about kind of what are the options. So nothing's off the table. And everything's up for grabs.
What's the ambition for Virgin?
When I talk to clients, I tell them the job of all programmers is to make more listeners listen longer. And I think no matter what the radio station, that's the job. And I think it's, you know, it's not getting any easier. We've seen this explosion of choice, particularly on DAB, and Virgin's part of that. So I think even maintaining an audience is more of a challenge than it used to be, and growing an audience is a bigger one. And of course, that's what we have to do. The station's barely a year old. It launched well. It's a very strong brand, and it's still got an awful lot of potential to unlock.
Okay, I'll come back, if I may, in a year's time and see how you got on.
Yeah, I do.
But just before we pack up, just going back into that global perspective, how is Britain regarded in the radio world?
You know, I don't know if I had come from any other country whether I could have built the consultancy business. I had no idea when I started how much, definitely Europe. I mean, to give you a quick rundown, in the last few years, I've worked in Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Latvia, Slovakia, Slovenia, Croatia, Germany, Ireland, UK, Estonia, a number of other places as well. And it's extraordinary how much they look to the UK. Now, my sense is, 10 years ago, more, people would very much look to America. And I think the consolidation in America, the decline in the quality of the programming sort of made people look for some new ideas. I think some of the consultants who came in from America sort of knew how to do... They had the AC playbook or the CHR playbook, and didn't adapt their playbook for local market conditions. So I think people have all, certainly all around Europe and a lot in the Middle East and Far East, look to the UK. And it's amazing. People in small towns a long way from international airports do know of Capital and Heart and Radio 2 and Virgin. And you go, that's incredible. And I think things like the quality of broadband connections and streaming mean these people listen. And they are students of radio who study UK radio, perhaps more than we ever realise.
Francis Curry, thank you. And good luck. Congratulations, but I better let you get on with some work now. Thanks for talking to the Radio Today programme. We have some news now from Stuart Clarkson. I think you'll find, Francis, that you're the top story.
Thank you, Trevor. As you've been hearing, Francis Curry is joining Wireless Group as Group Content Director for its music radio stations. He'll oversee Virgin as well as the local radio stations in England, Wales and Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. Liam Thompson, the PD of Virgin, is leaving to return home to Ireland for a new project. Radio stations came together this week to broadcast coverage of the One Love Manchester concert from the Old Trafford Cricket Ground. Well done to all involved in making it happen at such short notice. Radios 1, 2, 5 Live, Manchester and the World Service shared a BBC programme, while the vast majority of commercial radio stations also took a feed of the gig. Radio Caroline will broadcast on the former BBC World Service medium wave frequency 648. After being awarded a community radio licence for East Anglia, the station was given the go-ahead by Ofcom last month. It now says the regulators also agreed to its request for a 1 kilowatt transmitter. Radio 2's announced the best lineup ever, as it says, for this year's Festival in a Day at Hyde Park in September. Take That, Blondie, Shania Twain among the artists performing, as well as James Blunt, Emily Sande, Rick Astley, Stereophonics. It'll be broadcast live on Radio 2 and on the Red Button. Meanwhile, the BBC's announced plans for covering this year's Glastonbury. Radio 3 will broadcast from the event for the first time. There'll also be output on Radio 1, 1 Extra, Radio 2, 6 Music and the Asian Network, and BBC presenters working on the output will include Alice Levine, Annie Mack, Kerris Matthews, Chris Evans, Clara Amfro, Hugh Stevens, Joe Wiley, Lauren Verne, Mark Radcliffe, Steve Lamack and more. Former LBC Capital and BBC Radio London presenter Anna Cookson is joining BBC Radio Kent to co-host The Breakfast Show with John Warnett. She replaces Maggie Doyle, who's leaving the station after 3 years. Former Signal Breakfast presenter Louise Stones is joining BBC Radio Stoke for a weekend show. Louise left the Wireless Group station in February after 16 years on Breakfast. She's doing Saturday afternoons on the BBC service. And the former Essex Radio, Melody Radio and Primetime Radio presenter Dave Gilby has passed away at the age of 75. Dave started out in radio on the offshore station Radio City in 1965 and also worked at pirate stations including Britain Radio and Radio 355. That's it for this week. There's lots more news from around the industry at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stu. David Lloyd after this.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more. Radio
Moments. This week, 13 years ago, it was Radio 1 drive time for Scott Mills. And here he is in his earlier days at Key.
Okay, it's almost 10 to 11. This is Scott Mills. If it's Tuesday morning, still can't get rid of this cold. Everybody around here at the moment has had this like lingering cold, flu-y thing for about 2 weeks now. Just won't go away, will it? If you've got something similar, or maybe you need some advice on another health-related matter, don't forget, our Healthline 95 is open. If you're worried about a health-related problem, we'll have doctors, dentists, chemists and nurses here on Friday from 12 noon until 4. You can
call Scott Mills on Key in 1995, and the way radio was back then as well. And whilst we're at it, we really should play this little bit too, from even earlier in Scott's career.
We start a new week of In Session with a male solo singer from Bournemouth who is about to be quite big. He got his first signing with EMI Records when he was 17. He's now 21 and...
Scott Mills, who began Radio 1 Drive Time this week in 2004. Last week we marked the 60th anniversary of Test Match Special, and we should also observe that this week, 7 years ago, we lost one of its commentators and its creator, Robert Hudson.
Good morning, Henry.
My dear old thing, a very good day, Aggers, and thank you for that.
Morning, everyone.
Good morning to you. Welcome to Old Trafford on what I'm glad to say at the moment is a fine day.
Welcome to everybody at the start of this summer. Hope we've all had a good winter. We've got through it anyhow, which is something.
Bowling remarkably enough on this warm morning in a sweater, moves lightly up, well up on his toes.
back in. Bowls to Botham. Botham drives his four runs. A marvellous stroke, that.
What a marvellous stroke.
The voices of summer in memory of Robert Hudson from Test Match Special. His vivid descriptions of cricket really set the standard for commentators in the many years to come. And he was said to be guided by the words of the great Yorkshire bowler Wilfred Rhodes, who'd become blind. And Wilfred had said, "Paint a picture and keep it the right way up." 1944 now, and this week a new service from the BBC, Cabaret and Swing on 583, on behalf of the Allied forces. It began the day after the Normandy landings.
This is the Allied Expeditionary Forces programme of the BBC. We are initiating today a radio broadcasting service for the members of the Allied Expeditionary Forces. We shall call this service the AEF programme. It's to be a service especially prepared for you, and we shall try to make it of a character suited to your needs. Its purpose is threefold: to link you with your homes by means of news broadcasts from the United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States, to give you the latest news of our own and other war fronts and the world events, and finally to afford you diversion and relaxation during those precious few moments of leisure from the main job now at hand. The station identification, or signature tune, so to speak, of the service, will be these notes.
Ding, 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 ding. We ought to bring those chimes back, didn't we? We could have endless fun on our stations on the hour. The launch of the AEFP from the BBC, the station closed soon after VE Day the following year. Peter Bromley died this week 14 years ago. He was BBC Radio's voice of horse racing for 40 years.
Shergar moving sweetly on the outside, takes up the running. On the far side, Rivaretto on the rails, but Shergar is the leader with three furlongs to go. He's gone two lengths clear of Silver Season, and he's opening up a lead now. Shergar's going for the guns. He's gone four, five, six, seven, eight lengths clear. Shotgun swerves under pressure. Two furlongs out. The Derby is the procession. Shergar is 10 lengths clear.
Peter Bromley, who died this week in 2003. It's an amazing 44 years this week since the start of this incredible Radio 1 breakfast show.
19 minutes now past 7, 19 after 7. And in case you've been out of the country, or you've just been released, or something like that, and you didn't know there's a new lineup on 247 metres, Noel Edmonds here on your breakfast show for this Wednesday morning, and each and every weekday morning at 9 o'clock, Tony Blackburn, 3 hours right through to 12, and Johnny Walker at 2, David Hamilton, and then at 5 o'clock, Radio 1 Club.
That show was ahead of its time, I think. Noel Edmonds beginning his 5-year stint as the second ever presenter of Radio 1 Breakfast this week in 1973. He replaced Tony Blackburn. TV presenter Russell Harty appeared on the launch day of Red Rose Radio in Lancashire. He was also on the board. Russell died this week, 29 years ago.
And we're about to move off on the M6 northwards. I have two chaps with me, two patrol officers, two traffic patrol officers. What is your name, sir, first of all?
PC David here.
And yours?
PC Alan Holehouse.
So we've got David on the right-hand side and Alan on the left-hand side, and you're from the police headquarters, the Lancashire police headquarters at Houghton. You've kindly volunteered.
Russell Harty, who died this week in 88. To Grimsby now, it's 2001.
Until now, Grimsby and Cleethorpes has been missing something. We asked you what it was.
I like to admit what I like, for our age.
I think you've got to be playing what people want to hear, not just youngsters.
Good quality music.
Easy listening. I think the children get enough, actually, I think, is what we want to hear.
On Compass FM, the music speaks for itself. And we won't talk all over it. The latest and the greatest songs you enjoy.
I'm sure he's talking over those records. Compass FM, launching in Grimsby 16 years ago. Not just for youngsters. In fact, by the sounds of it, not for youngsters at all. When it comes to radio concepts dreamt up over a few beers, I suspect this numbered amongst them. A ventriloquist on the radio. This week in 1950.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Ed Ducariati with...
Bruh, do you have to have your trousers pressed just before we go on the air?
Well, actually, I like to look smart.
I know, but look at that crease. It's like a razor's edge.
Yes, jolly good, isn't it?
Good nothing. I have to sit on that.
Educating Archie, which began this week in 1950. You could hear it on the BBC Light programme on Sunday lunchtimes with Peter Brough and his doll, Archie Andrews. It attracted, wait for this, 15 million listeners and a fan club boasting 250,000 members. And you could hear people on there as well, like Tony Hancock, Benny Hill, Harry Secombe and Dick Emery as well. So, with Bob Holness leaving LBC 32 years ago...
Independent Radio News at 7, Bob Holness.
Her Majesty the Queen opening new broadcasting house 4 years ago...
We're also joined at this moment by listeners around the world on the BBC World Service and by viewers on the BBC News Channel.
Trial broadcast from the House of Commons 42 years ago...
What do the industry ministers of the eight...
And in this political week, David Cameron, then opposition leader, suggesting 11 years ago that Tim Westwood's music on Radio 1 encouraged gun and knife crime. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments! Thanks, David. Thank you, Stu Clarkson and Francis Curry. This has been a TDC production. And next time, we'll have a report on US talk radio from Graham Mack, who's been at the annual Talkers Conference. See you next time.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.